David?
Where's David?
Do we have David?
Do we have David?
What?
Do we have David?
Who's David?
It's our reader. Oh, yeah. I'm not worried.
There's a seat for you.
Yeah, I have to sit here when you're not. Yeah, when I'm not moderating. Go ahead. Bye.
Hello. Hello, good afternoon. Mi nombre es David y soy un alcohólico. Distrito 16, área 06. Lo que voy a leer es la primera tradición. Diciembre de 1946. Todo nuestro programa de AA está firmemente basado en el principio de humildad. Es decir, de que justa proporción, esto supone, entre otras cosas, que logremos relacionarlo de la forma de vida con Dios y con nuestros semejantes, que nos veamos a nosotros mismos como realmente somos, una pequeña parte en una gran totalidad. Al ver así nuestros semejantes, disfrutaremos de armonía en nuestros grupos. Por esa razón, la tradición de AA puede decir con firmeza, nuestro bienestar común tiene la preferencia. Algunas preguntas. ¿Quiere esto decir que en AA el individuo no tiene mucha importancia? ¿Ha de ser dominado por su grupo, absorbido por él? Mucho absorbido por él, no, parece que resulta ser así. Tal vez no hay en la tierra una sociedad que se preocupe más por el bienestar personal de nuestros miembros, que está más dispuesto a conceder al individuo mayor libertad posible de creer, actuar en Alcohólicos Anónimos. Nunca se oye la palabra tienes que. Muy pocos grupos imponen castigos a nadie por incumplimiento. Sí sugerimos, pero nunca castigamos. Al cumplir o no cumplir con cualquier principio de AA, es asunto que corresponde a la conciencia del individuo. Es el juez de su propia conducta. Seguimos al pie de la letra las antiguas palabras, no juzgarás. Muchas gracias.
And for those of us who don't speak Spanish, I will now read it in English. And this is Tradition 1, December 1947, coming from Language of the Heart. Our whole AA program is securely founded on the principle of humility, that is to stay perspective, which implies, among other things, that we relate ourselves rightly to God and to our fellows, that we see each other, we see ourselves as we really are, a small part of the great whole. Seeing our fellows thus, we shall enjoy group harmony. That is why AA tradition can confidently state our common welfare comes first. Does this mean, some will ask, that in AA the individual doesn't count too much? Is he to be swallowed up, dominated by the group? No, it doesn't seem to work out that way. Perhaps there is no society on earth more solicitous of personal welfare, more careful to grant the individual the greatest possible liberty of belief and action. Alcoholics Anonymous has no musts. Few AA groups impose penalties on anyone for nonconformity. We do suggest, but we don't discipline. Instead, Compliance or non-compliance with any AA principle is a matter of convenience, or is a matter for the conscience of the individual. He is the judge of his own conduct. These words of old time, judge not, we observe most literally. Language of the Heart, Tradition 1, 1947.
Aloha. My name is Cheryl and I am an alcoholic. So our presenters for this panel are David R. from Area 18 and Deborah L., Area 9 delegate, Wayne H., Area 2 delegate, Lisa S., Area 72 alternate chair, and Tara L., Area 69. Our timer for this panel is Kevin M.
My name's Kevin and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 1st, 2023. My home group is our primary purpose. For this session, each of the presenters will give an 8-minute presentation. The green light comes on immediately after the presenter introduces themselves. The yellow caution light comes on after 7 minutes, and the red light ends the presentation. If the red light turns on, we will thank the speaker with a warm applause. If the presentation is being interpreted, the time allowed will be doubled to 16 minutes, with a yellow light at 14 minutes. Sharing from the floor, microphones will be timed at 2 minutes. The yellow light comes on at 90 seconds, and the red light at 2 minutes. Followed by a loving applause. If the speaker is being interpreted, the time allowed will be doubled to 4 minutes with the yellow light coming on at 3 minutes.
Okay, we're gonna start with Andrew R. When we disagree, participating tradition one in difficult, practicing tradition one in difficult conversations.
Let's fix this. Am I good? I would like to thank the 2026 Process Committee for the invitation to speak on this topic. It's quite an honor. Thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Andrew. I'm a grateful alcoholic. I'm from Area 18. My home group is 7 a.m. Zoomers, Idaho, Area 18. You may notice I'm wearing a lanyard of pearls today. A dear friend gave them to me, and I wore them intentionally. Because lately, in some of our service conversations, there's been a lot of pearl clutching. Honestly, I admit sometimes I'm the one doing it. When I was asked to speak on When We Disagree, Practicing Tradition One in Conversations, I realized something immediately. My entire AA service life has been born inside disagreement and controversy. I don't come with answers. I come with experience and a little humility. In the 12 and 12, Tradition One says, most individuals cannot recover unless there is a group. It becomes plain that the group must survive or the individual will not. That's not poetry, that's survival. My sobriety depends upon the group, and the group depends upon unity. In the big book on page 98, we're reminded that AA is for people with job or no job, wife or no wife. Some of us have no jobs. Some of us do have lives. Some of us have partners, some of us have lost everything. Some walk in polished, some still crawl in broken. AA was never built for sameness. Unity is not optional, it's oxygen. And this isn't just spiritual language, it's measurable. Research shows that people involved in AA and 12-step programs achieve 21 to 60% higher rates of continuous abstinence than those in other treatments. Long-term studies show that people engaged in recovery fellowship groups doubles the chances of sustained abstinence compared to recovery alone. Peer support increases retention, reduces relapse, improves long-term sobriety. These aren't just encouraging numbers. They tell us something simple and profound. Connection saves lives. Brené Brown says, connection is why we're here. It gives us purpose and meaning to our lives. Alcoholism, shame, fear, isolate us. Connection interrupts that isolation. Tradition one isn't about meetings running smoothly. It's about whether the alcoholic who walks in finds connection or walks out alone. Unity is not sentimental. It's statistical. It's structural. It's life or death. To me, AA is a gem with as many sparkling facets as it has members. Each member reflects light from a slightly different angle. But remove enough of those facets, and the gem loses its brilliance. We are living in charged political times. And here's the hard truth. AA is not a hotbed of mental health. We're alcoholics. We're spiritually growing, not spiritually perfected. Sometimes growth is noisy. My online home group is 7 a.m. Zoomers. We started during COVID when in-person meetings were limited. Politics, fear, and strong opinions were front and center. The split in our group was painful. People stopped speaking. Sides were formed. We were told, shut down your meetings and get back into the rooms. I became the first GSR of Idaho's first online-only AA group, not because things were smooth, but because they weren't. My service life began in controversy. We say AA has no opinion on outside issues. That's true as a fellowship. Outside issues don't stay outside of our lives. They seep into our home groups. They show up in our business meetings. They walk in with the alcoholic who is still hurting. The 12 and 12 also says, we believe there isn't a fellowship on earth which lavishes more devoted care upon its individual members. Surely there is none which more jealously guards the individual's right to think, talk, and act as he wishes. That line convicts me, because sometimes I would love to point out how wrong some people are, but my supreme humility and my sponsor and my service sponsor remind me to pray, take my own inventory, and focus on unity. In service, I've seen heated conversations about a meeting wanting biological women only and no trans women. Whether to fund interpretation and translation or not. Whether AA should have public information booth at Pride. There have been tears. There's been raised voices. There is passion. Everyone believed they were protecting AA. Everyone believes they are protecting AA. A friend once told me, it's not what we get accomplished, it's how we treat people. That line humbles me. Because tradition one isn't asking, did you win? It's asking, did you protect the group? Sometimes protecting the group looks like restraint. Sometimes it looks like listening. Sometimes it looks like not saying the clever thing I've rehearsed in my head. When emotions were high in our area about a public information booth at Pride, something spiritual happened. We slowed down. We studied the traditions. We did in-reach. Elder statesmen steeped in the traditions guided us back to principles instead of personalities. I am profoundly grateful for my sponsor, my service sponsor, and those elder voices. Today, our CPC and PI committee is bustling, not because we avoided disagreement, but because we survived it. Tradition one says the group must survive or the individual will not. That means unity is not about comfort, it's about survival. When we argue about online meetings, gender identity, translation funding, pride events, politics, the stakes are higher than our opinions. Because the alcoholic who still suffers doesn't need us to agree. They need us to exist. They need us unified enough that when they reach out, someone answers. AA is a gem with as many facets as it has members. And when we guard unity, when we treat each other with dignity, even in disagreement, we protect the one thing that makes recovery possible, connection. So when we disagree, the question is not who is right. The question is, are we protecting the connection that saves lives? Thank you for letting me be part of that connection. Thank you for protecting this gem. Thank you for letting me share. Mahalo.
Presenter two is Deborah L., and she's going to discuss mental health and AA, what's our role and what it isn't.
Thanks so much, everyone. I know we're running late, so I'll get going. My name is Deborah, and I'm an alcoholic from Area 9, mid-Southern California. I was excited to speak about this topic, mental health and AA, what's our role and what isn't. I love assignments like this because they give me the opportunity to read, research, and discuss with other AA mentors the material produced by members like you through our General Service Office publishing departments. Our literature gives us guidance rooted in experience, not opinion. Let's jump in. At the conference level, our role may be with asking, who is the audience? Where should helpful information be gathered from? Is this material directed to the AA member, or is it directed to healthcare professionals? We often seek input from medical, social, and psychological professionals when developing literature that touches on medical matters. For example, in the pamphlet, The AA Member, Medications and Other Drugs, P11, because the subject involves important medical decisions, a group of physicians who are members of AA, along with two physicians who are friends of AA, were asked to review the pamphlet. That tells me something important. AA stays in its lane and seeks professional input when needed. It goes on to read, some alcoholics require medication. In the same pamphlet, it states clearly, Alcoholics Anonymous recognizes that their members are not immune to other medical and psychological problems. Some of us cope with depression that can be suicidal, schizophrenia requiring hospitalization, bipolar disorder, epilepsy, diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and other medical or biological illnesses. How many of us today have only one problem? How many of us have more than just drinking as a health concern? AA acknowledges this reality and is aware some alcoholics have mental health conditions or medical concerns and need to find help for those issues elsewhere. But AA can offer help with alcoholism as few other professionals have been able to. The pamphlet goes on to say that because of difficulties many alcoholics have with drugs, some AA members have taken the position that no one in AA should take medication. While this position may have prevented relapses for some, it has meant disaster for others. There have been tragic cases where members told depressed alcoholics to throw away their medication. Depression returned. In some cases, suicide followed. Members with problems such as those described have been discouraged by well-meaning AA friends from taking prescribed medication, only to suffer severe consequences. To make matters worse, they felt guilty, believing that AA was against pills. The pamphlet is clear. It is wrong to give medical advice or suggest any alcoholic deprive themselves of medication that can alleviate or control physical or emotional problems. So, what is our role? It is to use good timing, vision, and estimate in encouraging your prospect. AAs can often help where no one else can. If the prospect is alcoholic, they will understand you at once. You can suggest reading a pamphlet or two together, such as Is AA for You? Or Questions and Answers on Sponsorship. Read together the doctor's opinion or Bill's story and ask if your prospect can find themselves in the description there. Tradition 5, singleness of purpose, will help everyone at this stage. We don't diagnose, prescribe, or advise medically. The treatment committee workbook, M40, speaks to this as well. Under the chapter carrying the AA message into psychiatric mental health settings, page 17, it reminds us AAs have been bringing meetings into psychiatric facilities since the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. As early as 1939, Dr. Blaisdell allowed AA meetings at Rockland State University, Rockland State Hospital in New York. Alcoholics recovered there, and they continue to recover in similar settings today. The workbook reminds us AA has no opinion on outside issues such as diagnosis, treatment, or medications. This is Tradition 10 in action. In these settings, our essential element for success is enthusiasm, preparation, and a solid understanding of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. No clinical expertise is necessary or needed, even if you have some. While wearing an AA hat, all you need to be is a member in good standing. The pamphlet for our members, P87, Alcoholics, AA for Alcoholics with Mental Health Issues and their sponsors, this inward-facing pamphlet, meaning written for our members, it includes stories of recovered members and their sponsors who walk this path together. Again, professional insight was sought. It includes these important safeguards. No member should ever play doctor. All medical advice should come from a qualified physician. Be honest with your doctor about how you take your medication. Tell your doctor about that you are in recovery. Be aware that behavioral changes may start with new medication. Seek a physician experienced in treatment in treating alcoholism if needed. The pamphlet also reminds us alcoholics can develop dependencies on substances other than alcohol. Misuse of medication can threaten sobriety. Medical supervision is essential. Again, AA does not replace medical care. On the one-page fact sheet, SMF 94, it states plainly what AA does not do. Make medical or psychiatric diagnosis or prognoses or offer advice. This service material is clear about what we do and how uniquely suited a recovered alcoholic can be to those seeking help with their drinking problem. So what is our role? Our role is to share our experience, strength, and hope about recovery from alcoholism like many AA members who have achieved sobriety can. We can continue to carry AA's message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Practice our 12 steps. Honor the 12 traditions. Avoid opinions on outside issues, encouraging members to seek professional help when needed. We are not doctors, therapists, psychiatrists, pharmacists, at least while we're wearing the membership hat. We are recovered alcoholics helping other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Mental health and sobriety are not competing issues. They are realities many of us live with. The balance comes when we stay spiritually grounded, refuse to play doctor, respect medical science, uphold our traditions, keep AA's primary purpose front and center. Our responsibility is not to solve mental illness. Our responsibility is to carry the message of recovery from alcoholism clearly, compassionately, and without interference in outside issues. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Our third presenter is Wayne H. And remote communities are rural, homebound, or isolated members finding AA.
Here we go. Hi, my name is Wayne. I'm an alcoholic. Panel 76, Area 02, delegate from Alaska. To answer this question, I'd like to start by giving examples of what a remote community looks like, or some remote communities look like, and some personal experiences I've had. And this is limited on people I've worked with and listening to our remote communities' presentations over the years. And the first example I'd like to get comes from Nikki O of Area 28. And she says, imagine living in a too light town, 30 miles from the closest meeting in a power wheelchair. Things changed and people moved. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity returned. Alone, scared, and with the desire to change the way he felt, a drink started to sound like a solution. Nikki comments, taking a chance and asking how you are, then listening to the answer may provide the solution to someone, and as for me, who is isolated. So reaching out to people is a big part of what we do in AA. For people with accessibility barriers, it is my opinion we need to assess and work around these obstacles to the best of our ability. Geographical, cultural, language, and life conditions also challenge many of us, as well as a still suffering alcoholic. Most of Alaska is a remote community. We have a large geographical area with a population of a little under 750,000 people, two-thirds of which live off the road system and can only be accessed by air when the weather's good, by boat when the water isn't frozen. Quite a few people in our state have alcohol problems. To repeat a quote from Sander H. of Hooper Bay, many whole families are alcoholics, even including infants. When this is the case, they stay at home getting alcohol delivered, becoming isolated. Area O2's remote communities work has given her the ability to say, they can steal my fuel, but they cannot steal my peace of mind. They cannot steal my sobriety. Some of the methods we use to reach those who are homebound are a 24-hour hotline, three times a week call-in meetings, and a variety of local online meetings. The online meetings have become more popular and accessible and anonymous with the advent of the space-based internet. Another barrier is language. Most of us have problems understanding when someone is speaking a language different from ours. Laurie R. from Area 9, Saskatchewan, put it like this. There have been attempts at translating AA literature into these languages, but the nuances in dialect make it difficult. She goes on, alcohol is much easier to access than Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think we can agree with Utah Area 69's Teresa M. AAs are the same in that we all feel different. We must find our mutual experiences, strengths, and hopes through group meetings, group unity, and organized service. This program has grown among social minorities because an AA member at the time and was still willing to help. Oh, I'm sorry. Anyway, in our area, the Plain Language Big Book has been a boon for this, for people who don't speak language or speak English as a first language or don't understand much language at all. And it's really helped them to grasp and receive the message. Culture is also an isolation problem for us. A member of Southern California's Area 05 put it this way. We have to look at our own internalized racism. An example comes from the Los Angeles Central Office. They were getting about a call a week from someone looking for a Chinese meeting, but nowhere to send them. We realized that there must be cultural barriers that were keeping Chinese-speaking alcoholics from finding their way to us. Another cultural block is perceived status. From Mid-Southern California's Area 09, Ed L. said, as a new GSR actively participating in the area, delegates and trustees seemed remote and inaccessible. I never knew non-trustee directors existed. He asks, does our focus and self-identification as the responsible ones in AA make us less available? That is, isolated to the still suffering alcoholic. Our job, in my opinion, is to learn how to meet these people, where they are, and then only can we help. There are many life conditions that can be considered isolating as well. They include the physical, like being deaf or blind, mobility issues, temporary living in remote regions, such as those in the military, miners, petroleum workers. There are immigrants and seasonal workers. There are senior citizens who cannot leave their home. There are patients who cannot leave their institution for various reasons. Single parenting folks must choose between going to a meeting or staying at home with their child. Sexual diversity is prevalent. We have some in the homeless population that want to get sober. These and others are around us every day. A lot of these folks want to find us, and we can facilitate that by supporting all forms of message distribution, either be it books, PSAs, videos, or just by plain doing what we do and reaching out. We in AA are the best people on the planet to deal with these issues because most, if not all of us, have undergone and overcome them. I believe there are two that we, I believe we need to take two notions to carry with us. First is, it's a crucial part of our recovery. If we want to stay sober using the 12 steps, we must be willing to carry them to the most sordid spot on earth. Second is compassion. We must be willing to meet people as they are, where they are, be it in a village, at a home, or under the bridge. Folks from Area 79 BC Yukon say, these are about removing the barriers to serve these people. To close, Linda B. from Area 34, Western Michigan says, I learned it doesn't matter where or how we do the work of AA. It just matters that we do it. Thank you.
So presenter number four is Lisa. And what does welcoming mean in 2026? Safety, inclusion are our primary purpose.
My name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic. I currently serve Area 72 as the area alternate chairperson. I love my area, and I love our entire Pacific region. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to be part of this panel and to share on the topic, what does welcoming mean in 2026? Safety, inclusion, and our primary purpose. Let me start with a story. Early in my sobriety, I remember having a particularly rough day and knew I needed a meeting. I arrived just as one was starting and took a seat at the back of the room. I looked down at my hands and feet and I listened. After about 10 minutes, I realized that I was only hearing male voices. So I raised my head and looked around and I didn't see another woman. I leaned over to the man next to me and asked him, is this a men's meeting? He said yes. I was so embarrassed. I started to stand up to leave, and he gently put his hand on my forearm and said very kindly, stay. There was so much warmth in that moment, no awkwardness, no correction, just simple kindness. I stayed. I listened. I didn't drink that day. That experience has always stayed with me as a very clear example of welcoming. I felt safe enough to remain, included enough to belong, and able to receive what I needed from that meeting. Welcoming for me is warmth in action. I've learned that inclusion is rarely accidental. When I served as our area language chair, a Hispanic member once told me, if you show up to our events, we show up to yours. If you don't show up, we don't show up. He was talking about English-speaking and Spanish-speaking members learning how to show up to each other's events. And that simple statement reshaped how I think about inclusion. So I started showing up. I didn't speak enough Spanish to understand everything, but someone bilingual would always sit beside me and quietly interpret so I could follow along. I never felt like an outsider. I felt included. And honestly, I had such a blast at their events. I also noticed something simple but powerful. Before meetings began, members would greet each other as they arrived, often shaking hands one by one. It created an immediate sense of connection. It felt personal. It felt warm. And over time, I realized how meaningful that small behavior really is. Shaking someone's hand, looking them in the eye, acknowledging their presence. It's a very direct expression of welcoming warmth. Now, when I attend a linguistic district meeting or see Hispanic members at an AA event, I often walk over and shake their hands. And my hope is simple. I want people to feel welcome and to know that I'm glad they're here and that their presence matters. I've learned that welcoming can look different for different people, which is why I try to welcome others in the way I learn feels welcoming to them. Welcoming for me is both environmental and relational. It can mean having the fluorescent lights turned down, speaker volumes lowered, and enough space between chairs so that I'm not brushing up shoulder to shoulder with someone else. Those things directly affect whether I can settle into a meeting and actually hear what's being shared. Welcoming can also be incredibly simple. Someone smiling warmly and asking how I'm doing and really meaning it. Hearing someone say they're glad to see me. It's the warmth of another human being extended directly toward me. And as someone said in an AA meeting this morning, I find the warmth of that power in Alcoholics Anonymous. Safety makes inclusion possible. There are environments and interactions where I become unsettled or overstimulated pretty quickly. The lighting, the noise, group dynamics, they sometimes create pretty significant internal stress for me. And when something feels off, my body quickly reacts and my attention narrows towards trying to understand what is happening around me. One way this shows up for me is how I experience meetings. I remember a meeting where a member spoke very forcefully about belief in a higher power as the only way forward, not just a higher power, but his higher power. He was using statements about what and how we must believe. I found myself tense and distracted, wondering how that might land for the newcomer. Afterward, I decided to speak with him, and before I did, I had to pause and sort through my reactions, because I was irritated, and I didn't want to approach him from that place. I was very aware that how I spoke mattered just as much as what I said. So I tried to be intentional. I asked if he would be open to hearing how I experienced his share, and when he agreed, I shared my concern that newcomers might misunderstand Alcoholics Anonymous if they heard such specific statements about what we must believe. And that interaction clarified something important for me about safety. In that situation, safety meant trying to speak honestly without creating unnecessary harm. My understanding of safety has changed over time. I used to think about safety mostly in terms of environments. And now I think about safety more in terms of how I respond. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't guarantee comfort, but it does give me tools. I can pause. I can inventory. I can choose my words carefully. I can decide whether to engage or step back. For me, those moment-to-moment choices are one of the most practical forms of safety I have. My understanding of welcoming, safety, and inclusion have also been shaped by something I often hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, that alcoholism is a disease of loneliness. So many of us know what it feels like not to belong, to feel out of place, to believe we are not wanted. And those experiences are painful, and they are incredibly common in the stories that we hear in these rooms, which is why welcoming carries so much weight. When we recover and begin to change how we relate to others, we have opportunities to help create something many of us desperately needed, a sense of safety, connection, and belonging. For me, welcoming, safety, and inclusion converge at our primary purpose. We are here to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Thank you.
All right, presenter 5 is Tara L. Sponsorship in 2026. Are we still carrying the message one-on-one?
Good afternoon. My name is Tara, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. I want to thank Area 17 for hosting this amazing event, and it's an honor to serve Alcoholics Anonymous in any capacity. And an honor to be here standing for Area 69 this year at Praza. I don't have a service position. I was not the first one picked. I had very little time to do this, and I've never read from the podium. So we're going to give it the best shot we got. I love your confidence in me. Okay, so as I contemplated this topic very shortly, I came to believe that the greatest risk to sponsorship is not change. The greatest risk to sponsorship is rigidity. More specifically, the risk is what happens when sponsorship quietly begins to absorb responsibilities it was never designed to carry, and then we mistake that overreach for commitment to program. Unfortunately, I hear a lot of dividing language in Alcoholics Anonymous, us versus them, alcoholics versus normies. I hear the idea that one alcoholic working with another alcoholic is what works, and that anything outside that narrative is unnecessary or even harmful because they don't understand. I want to be very careful here because lived experience matters. It mattered to me and it still matters to me. There was a time when I simply was not willing to listen to someone who hadn't lived this, who only understood alcoholism from outside or read a book in some college class somewhere. Identification was not optional for me. It was absolutely the doorway to recovery. But that wasn't the whole story, and it never has been. Our own book in history points towards something broader, more accurate, and honest. And Bob asked me not to give a history lesson, so I'm not. Just bear with me for a minute. It names the psychologist Carl Jung, whose theories are fundamentally tied to our 12 steps. It names William James, who is considered the father of American psychology, who gave us a framework for surrender. It names Dr. Silkworth, who detoxed Bill W. in the hospital and proposed the idea of an allergy. Alcoholics did not come into existence by rejecting medicine, psychology, or spiritual inquiry. It came into existence alongside them. I'm not here again to give you a history lesson, only to point out that it never has been, and especially not now in 2026, just one alcoholic working with another in isolation. When I look back at my own recovery, it becomes very clear how dangerous that isolation would have been for me. There wasn't one person, one conversation, or one role that carried me through. There were many points of contact, many moments where someone did exactly what they were meant to do, and more, nothing more than that. There was the doctor who helped me medically stabilize when I couldn't do it on my own. There was the structured treatment program that gave me the basic tools for coping, and most importantly, directed me to Alcoholics Anonymous, even though I swore I wouldn't come back. Instead of presenting itself as a replacement for it. There were people in meetings who shared their experience that eventually helped me to cut through my delusions and kept me coming back long enough till something could change. There were the therapists and psychologists who helped me begin to untangle trauma from long before I ever picked up a drink, and the mental illnesses that I had been suffering, and still do. And then there was my sponsor. She was very clear from the beginning that this work, while absolutely vital, was not hers to do, it was mine. She met me early when I was raw and unsteady, and she didn't soften the process or dramatize it. She took me through the first three steps in a small group setting, and from the very beginning, she clearly defined her role and strictly stuck to it. She did not position herself as my emotional anchor, my authority, or my solution to anything. She positioned herself as someone who had walked a path and was willing to show me how to walk it. That clarity was everything for me. I realized looking back that at that point in my recovery, I had been missing the reality and the beauty of the forest because I had been overly focused on some of the ugliness of the trees. I had taken something essential like one-on-one sponsorship and narrowed it down so much that I could no longer reflect the reality of how recovery actually happens. Sponsorship works best when it stays grounded in its original purpose, and my sponsor modeled that consistently. She was very explicit that she's not a therapist, not a doctor, and not a higher power. She was extremely clear that if I needed one, I would seek it out promptly and without regret. Her role was to take me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous exactly as they are laid out in the big book so I could have my own spiritual awakening. She reminded me again and again that my dependence was not on her, but on a power greater than self. And it was through the steps that it would allow me access to this power. She gave me no opinion on what I should do about anything. She simply showed me how to apply the program to it. When the time came to share my inventory, she explained something fundamentally that changed how I understood sponsorship and all the scary stories I'd heard. In her ever matter-of-fact tone, she told me it didn't matter who heard it, and I was so offended. I wanted this woman to hear it, and she was like, well, I'm just here. But you can read it to other people too, Tara. It's not that big of a deal, because everything's a big deal. And what mattered was my willingness to speak it out loud and honestly and openly. The person listening is not the cure or the answer. They were simply present and connected. Get that going. The distinction kept the focus where it belonged and prevented me from attaching my recovery to any one person. She also made it clear that I would need more than one person in my life moving forward. I would need multiple people to practice the steps and accountability with. I would need community. I would need fellowship. I would need support that shifted and evolved over time. No single person, sponsor or otherwise, was meant to carry that responsibility alone or forever. That is not a flaw in our program. That is a safeguard. That is where the question of sponsorship 2026 really lives for me. One-on-one sponsorship, is it essential? It is irreplaceable. There is nothing that can substitute truly being seen by a sufferer of alcoholism, for being understood without needing to explain, and for being guided through the steps by someone who has actually done them and actually lives them. But sponsorship was never designed to be the only pillar of that arch we are building to walk through as free people. It's never meant to be solely to hold someone up, and when we ask it to be, we put pressure on relationships that were never built to sustain that kind of weight or pressure. People are coming into the rooms today speaking the language of treatment, trauma, and mental illness. That does not threaten Alcoholics Anonymous or take away from the healing power of one alcoholic speaking to another. It reflects the world we live in and our tenacity to keep seeking spiritual growth, open-mindedness, and willingness. In my opinion, what is really being asked of us is not to reject that language, but to stay clear about what our role is within it. That clarity is what I try to model as a sponsor today. I haven't deviated from what was given to me. My role is simple, and it is intentionally limited. I take people through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as they are laid out. I do not attempt to fill roles that don't belong to me. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a higher power. And although I've gone back to school to become a therapist, I'm not yours. My aim is to be useful, and there are many ways to be useful without trying to be someone's everything. And like your book points out, I am not the alpha or the omega. And I'm going to just end. Okay. So if we can do the stuff I skipped, I believe the message will continue to reach not only the still suffering alcoholic, but also the still sober alcoholic well into Alcoholics Anonymous future. May God bless you and keep you. Until then.
Okay, when you're up here, don't untighten the mic, please. Just move it up and down. All right. The floor is now open for sharing on presentations. There are four microphones on the floor. Please line up and you will be selected one at a time. I would like to recommend everyone of the 2-minute limit and a 4-minute limit for those requiring interpretation. The clock starts after you introduce yourself. Please do not come to the microphone for a second time until someone else in line has had a chance to share. Please keep your comments to the topic of this panel. We invite Spanish speakers to come to the mic. Volunteer interpreters are available.
Invitamos a los hispanohablantes a venir al micrófono a intérpretes voluntarios disponibles.
Okay. And
hi, I'm Silver. I am a recovered alcoholic. I wanted to comment on the presentation about mental health in AA. I was a PICPC last year, which is a public information and cooperation with professionals. And I asked my therapist about recommending people to AA, and she's told me, and this made me almost cry, she said a lot of her peers, other therapists, are not recommending that their people go to AA because AA members are telling them to stop taking their medication. That is stunning. They're telling them to stop taking their medication. So please spread the word that that is not our role, and it never was, and it's in the big book very clearly. Thank you.
All right, I believe our next is back there.
Hi, my name's Sandy, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm also referring to the mental health issue. Thank you for your presentation. And I had this experience where I shared an open mic about a mental health issue that I had experienced being new to AA. And out of nowhere, I actually am published in this month's issue of The Grapevine on this specific topic. On, yes, how I was new and I was told to stop taking my medication, and I did it for like 40 days and I was really suicidal. And, you know, I told my doctor, I have, you know, my doctor that deals with that. And I read that pamphlet, AA and Mental Health, and, you know, they stress that, you know, as long as I'm honest with my doctor and they know what I'm doing, I realized that reading that pamphlet that I always knew I had mental health issues, and so it was hard for me to surrender to the fact that I was alcoholic. Now reading that pamphlet, I realized that I have two conditions. You know, most of us don't have just one, right? And I have to treat them separately, and I thank God that I actually went on a Facebook group and was asking people's advice, and they were saying that my sponsor is not a doctor, and for that I'm just so grateful that there's support out there. And also with the PICPC, I actually share that information with my therapist, and she passes along that information, so I'm really grateful for it. So thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, I have one back here.
Hello everyone. Yo soy Cesar y soy un alcohólico. My name is Cesar and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a past delegate from Area 09, and wonderful presentations. The four of you guys, you did a good job. But my comment is that I know we have our Hispanic folks, and this is the first time that we're using these type of translations. And this is just like a suggestion, because sometimes, like this, I don't want to sound so critical. I know this is something that we're learning and we're using whatever is available for the technology. I like that. But at the same time, I see that a good amount of participation, the translation was not quite, you know, consistent. So my suggestion, this is the first panel, And so my suggestion would be whoever is doing the technical thing, please make sure that this meeting goes, pay attention to that, because it really cuts a lot of the participants. And in terms of inclusion, I think this is going to be a wonderful experience for them, but I'm just worried that there is amazing paragraphs when you guys speak. But thank you very much.
We're going to go up here, and then we'll go back to the back to the room.
Thank you. My name's Tom. I am alcoholic. I'm an alt DCM of District 25 currently, Area 72. I'm grateful to do that. That is the online district from Western Washington. And, you know, all of your talks, very insightful. I don't even know what to address. So I'm thinking, they all kind of add up to me to accessibilities. It's in one way or another. It's all about trying to break down those barriers that prevent anyone from having access to our life-saving program. And I have been going to online meetings since 1987, when I first got sober. I relapsed once, and I got sober in 92, but who cares? It's just my story. But what I'm trying to say here is, I've been deeply involved in trying to, the stigmas against the message. You know, people will sit around and listen to Joe and Charlie tapes, and that's okay. But go to an online meeting, that's not real AA. And there's like corrections where facilities, where panels, felons who are inside can now go back in. They'd never pass the background check, but they can now go back in on Zoom and say, hey, remember me? There's sobriety out here. And there's so much ways, and there's people who are mentally ill, there's agoraphobics, there's people who can't get to meetings, there's people in remote communities, everything you guys have covered. And what I want to say is, you know, the stigmas between with online AA is the problem, I think, because we don't have to give up anything. These are just new avenues we can carry the messages. We can have our physical home groups, and when we travel, we can have our online home groups and anchor that way, too. And there's just so many new ways, and I am excited to be a part of this so that we can, you know, move forward and into the century and find all these new ways to finally get our numbers up. You know, they've been stagnant for so long. So I love it. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to go to the back of the room over here, then there, and then back up here.
Buenas tardes. My name is Doris. I'm an alcoholic. I have fans. Nah, I'm kidding. The time. Okay, got it. I am Area 8 DCM for District 15 Linguistic District, and I loved the presentations, but I'm here to speak about what does welcoming mean in 2026? I love that we have two giant screens with bigger font. Thank you. It is still difficult to see from far in the back. Thank you for the Wordly app. Fancy, AI, amazing, but it did say that Riley is non-alcoholic. Trust tea. Yes, as well as many other things. I mean, yay, it's amazing. I'm assuming it's much cheaper than human interpreters, but I'm here to speak about equity. We do not have headphones. There's not enough headphones. And it goes very, very fast. And I'm very proud that we have three female alcoholics. Hispanic women is very difficult to stay in AA, more to serve. And I'm so proud of three female JSRs that are here today, but they are irritated and frustrated with this. And they have left our table. I'm hoping that maybe for the Pacific Regional Forum, we will have something different than this. Or maybe we'll have devices where we do not have to be plugging in the phones because the battery is dying. So those are my two cents. Thank you.
I'm gonna go back here.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Kai. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm very thankful to be here. Actually, I had a trip to Alaska before, and I and at a tiny little meeting in Homer, they talked about this, and I just booked my ticket. I'm from New York originally, so not really that group. I really loved what you said about being a therapist, but not being your therapist. That being said, I worked as a therapist for 15 years. I had 10 sober years. And the 10 sober years initially were without AA. Then I relapsed. And I went back rolling to AA because that's the place where I feel safe and where I find connection. But it took me a while to divide my approach as a therapist to being a member of AA and just being like everyone else here. It's still very important for me to, let's say, look at the disease from both angles, spiritual and also biological and psychological. But my sponsor, who is amazing, she told me that you don't have to like everyone here, but you love everyone here because God is a group of drunks, and that's how I feel about God. So I guess I just wanted to share and say to everyone here, we are a miracle, and I know that everyone says that, but that's how I truly feel. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to go right here. Me?
Hello. Oh. My name is Big. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I currently serve Area 42 as a GSR trainer, and I'm currently serving my District 6 in Area 42 as the alternate DCM. I want to thank the panel for a phenomenal job today, and I guess what I'll be sharing on is what does welcoming mean in 2026, safety, inclusion, and our primary purpose. And I loved all the, it was hard for which one to choose, but you know, I found myself in a similar position. I'm sure there's probably a couple other people in this room that have found themselves in a similar position. And our literature actually has, this is reading out of the AA group where it all begins, P16, it says some AA groups come together as specialized AA groups for men, women, young people, doctors, LGBT, and others. If the members are all alcoholic, and if they open the door to all alcoholics who seek help, regardless of profession, gender, or other distinction, and meet the other aspects defining an AA group, they may call themselves an AA group, and that definition of an AA group is in our third tradition. Any two or three alcoholics gathered together. So in our literature right here that we have that we could pass along to the people that come, we already have the answer to that. And when the sick and suffering person crosses our thresholds, we have literature that could assist us in welcoming the new person or the person that's suffering. Thanks.
I'm going to go to the back of the room, and unfortunately, that will be our last we'll have time for.
Hello, everybody. My name is Elba, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm from District 18, Spanish, in the Area 6. So here is the thing. I'm glad about the health, mental health discuss, because when I came here, I came through the hospital from the psychiatric, and so I take medication before I get to AA. Before I quit alcohol, I start medication. So when I get to Alcoholics Anonymous in the Latino community, I hear a lot of people say, you don't need medicine, AA is enough for you. But I was first 3 years in the English-speaking meeting, so I get the information. And now that I'm moved to the Spanish community and hear that strong language about not taking medication, God is enough. I'm like, I started to be involved in the district. I wanted to, we don't had, what is the thing? We don't had a committee about accessibilities. This year finally passed in the district. I'm planning to be part if they vote for me, because I really wanted to make a talk about different topics in the Latinos community. So thank you so much for all of you. I'm gonna pick your brain later on because I need those information. Thank you.
We have exactly 2 minutes, and I'm gonna go ahead and take this gentleman, and then that will be the last.
Thank you. My name is Benjamin, and I am an alcoholic. I live in Area 17. I wanted to say 2 things. One, real quick, online meetings saved my life this last month. I was in the hospital for 3 weeks. The only thing I could do was get on online meetings. I was in a remote community being stuck in the hospital, and it was very important. The second thing I wanted to say is I was advised by a friend of mine in the program who had a similar surgery as myself, which was a fusion of my spine, that they were told not to take their pain medicine and not to take their muscle relaxants, resulted in that friend's vertebrae getting broken by muscle spasms. And it has cost her, she's had to have 2 revisions of her spine surgery. It's very important not to play doctor. That's all I got, thank you. Thank you.
Okay, we are out of time for this panel. For those that wanted to share but didn't get the